We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer any questions you might have. In the studios of, I guess, Sioux Falls now. We can't call them the studios of University of Sioux Falls. It's now, we're in our own studios at 4th and Phillips here in Sioux Falls. Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite joins us. Hello, Joel.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, sir. How are things in the Mac world?
So far, so good. They're always great, really.
They're always great. From Exigent, their chief security officer, Amos Aesop, is here. I know Amos is here right in front of me. Hi, Amos.
Hey, here I am.
Yes, welcome.
I love the new facility. It's so spacious and airy, and you can see how nice the weather is. This is such a contrast from where we were before, which I don't want to say it wasn't a dungeon, but it was awful dark in that room where we used to sit.
I kept the lights low, by the way, kind of on purpose,
yeah,
kind of to live by the flow or the glow of the monitors.
But sure.
You know, that's the way it is.
But this really brightens things up for us.
This is very cool.
This is
very cool. We'll try to do our best here. And we have a special guest today. Tim Berry is with us. He is a practice lead in cloud engineering, and we're going to find out what that is a little bit later in the show. But welcome, Tim.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us, folks. This is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we'll try to provide the answers. If you still tolerate Facebook, the page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You may post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. Our text number is 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Twitter users can send questions to @KentSDPB. Email address is in the moment at sdpb.org. Well, quite a bit of news this week, guys. Lawmakers called on Amazon and Google to reconsider a ban on domain fronting. And I was going to ask Amos really what that is, because I'm not a big understander of things of that sort. It's a privacy issue, I understand. It's got to do with internet freedoms and things. But why would lawmakers be talking to Amazon and Google about in such a bipartisan way about that decision?
So the whole idea there is trying to bypass or circumvent any sort of internet censorship by hiding where that endpoint really is. It allows the user to block services and appear. Well, we talked about this earlier when you mentioned you jumped on your VPN in order to be able to access something from one location that you were unable to access from another location. It makes it so that you're able to communicate with an entirely different site now.
Okay, and that's the reason that they feel that journalists and activists, human rights activists and journalists, need those protections?
They do, yeah. And in some places around the world, you aren't able to access things through technology methods, right? So they say because you're behind a firewall of X country, we don't allow you to go to Y website, or we don't allow you to use whatever particular service. Maybe it's social media. Maybe it's a particular protocol. Maybe it's a particular type of regular media, whether it's streaming audio or video. But if you then utilize a service that makes you appear as though you're coming from a different country, perhaps it's VPN, that allows you to access those services remotely. As though you were in a location that was allowing those services in the first place.
How likely is it that they're going to you're going to stop doing that?
The likelihood, I'd love to make a prediction. At these days, the way things are going, sometimes things are happening in ways that I would think they shouldn't or wouldn't normally. But just because of the crazy climate that we're in today, honestly, I would say probably not. But it's certainly possible. The effort by Google and Amazon was partly due to pressure from the Russian government. Over an app called Telegram, I think we've talked about that previously on this on that program, so providing those services based on that sort of pressure is going to be difficult in this era. Or it might go completely the other direction, and I just it might be something completely unintelligible and ununderstandable these days because we just don't know how this stuff is going to play out.
Yeah, the app that they mention in this article happens to be, let me find it here. It's in a. They're using the Amazon's cloud services or cloud services to.
CloudFront.
Sort of cover. It's called Signal. Is the app that the organization. It's got a letter that they'll be banned from the from Amazon's cloud services if they continue to encrypt everything. I just thought that was an interesting topic. We'll have to maybe follow where that goes and come back to it at a later time on the show. Certainly not the only Google news out there. There's a lot of Android news going on, and there's another interesting article about some Amazon devices coming to the market. But the spat with Google and Amazon apparently has resulted in Google disabling all the YouTube apps on Amazon devices. Of course, people are screaming about that wondering if that's even legal or illegal or an abuse of power. I guess I'd like to ask that around the table and see what your thoughts on it, Joel. Particularly come to you in this instance.
The YouTube being
blocked
suspended.
On Amazon.
Yeah, that actually happened a while back as well. It's a funny thing. You don't really think that that's going to be a big deal, but a lot of the Amazon devices that are out there, whether it's the Kindle or whether it's the Echo Show or the other devices, you know, YouTube is just one of those things. It's like not having Google or not being able to text. It's just an app or a function that you expect to use on a modern device. I mean, like somebody sends you an email, hey, check this out. It's going to go to YouTube, and maybe it has to do with your work. Maybe it has to do with your family or your friends or whatever it is. It's very important. So it not being on the platform is probably going to be a bit contentious. I assume it'll get worked out. It's one of those things. It's like a cable company not having an ESPN. It's not going to last very long. So money's going to have to change hands. Something's going to have to happen for that to be. But yeah, definitely, it's definitely debilitating.
They decided to play hardball, though. There's not much.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what resolved it. This happened like maybe about a year ago with the Echo Show. They disabled YouTube videos on that, and then they kind of came back. And I'm not really sure. I didn't really look into why that happened, but. And it was kind of annoying, although it didn't really ruin my day or anything, but it just makes the device, whatever the device is, less usable. You know, like I said, it's like not being able to text somebody on your phone. You can still use it to make a phone call, but who wants to make a phone call?
So this isn't really a net neutrality thing, is it?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that.
It's just competitors, like, you know.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it's not net neutrality per se, but it certainly smells of it, or it certainly has hints of it, right? I mean, because
sure.
Here's the thing. You buy an Amazon product,
and
Amazon says, there's a competitor that I don't want you to be able to use. And that is at the heart of what net neutrality you're using this streaming media service, and it's using up too much of our bandwidth, so we're going to block it or make you pay extra. It's the ability of the service or product that you're purchasing to be able to block other services or products in the case of either competition or additional revenue or just because they're snotty about it.
Yeah, and I think the original issue that Google had with Amazon is particularly on the Echo Show, when you open a video on there, there's really no way to tell that you're watching a YouTube video. It just says, you just say play video, and it plays the video, and you know, it could be coming from anywhere. It is coming from YouTube. You just don't know that. And Google, understandably, takes, even though that service is basically free for everybody, they're like, we want people to know that's YouTube because that's our branding. So, you're right about that. I said it didn't have anything to do with net neutrality. It doesn't in the overarching
right.
sense, but you're definitely right in that this is the result of what can happen when net neutrality is suspended.
Trying to correlate this to something that's you know, the listeners can really you know, get their teeth into. And I was just trying to think, you know, what basically is going on here is if I've got an app, let's say YouTube, mm-hmm. since we're talking about that, and I partner with Intel, and say, okay, I only want YouTube to work on Intel devices, AMD, not so much. It's a possibility.
Or Apple devices and Windows.
You know, if you were a Chevy or a Ford or a Mazda owner, you go to the gas station, you're putting gas in your car. It's not
right.
a different gas for a different car. So,
it's not a perfect analogy, but, I mean, your point is accurate. And, you know, those are the things when, Ajit Pai says, we don't need to have these rules for that. It'll work fine on its own. Will it, though?
The FCC
Will it,
guy.
Though? Yeah. FCC, the head of the FCC, Ajit Pai. So, this is, again, Google's a very conscientious company. So is Amazon, for the most part, because, again, their clients all need these things and demand them. So it will get worked out. But, this could happen with all sorts of things without rules to prevent it.
Yeah. Can you imagine buying I bought a Vizio TV and Vizio doesn't agree with CBS, so I can watch anything I want but CBS.
Right, and that's a very close analogy. Absolutely.
You know, it's just one of those things that there would be so much uproar.
Yeah, the average consumer, even the prosumer like myself, doesn't want to go to the store and say, well, I'm going to buy this computer because I can do this and this, but I can't do that, so I'll have to buy this other computer as well. Nobody wants to do that. You buy a computer or a TV or a car because you want to use it the way you want to use it. And so that's, I think, what people expect.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to introduce another guest to our show. Tim Berry is here, and we're going to learn a little bit. I'm going to learn a lot about cloud computing or cloud storage, but I will hopefully have some great questions for Tim. If you'd like to get in on the agenda today and have some questions, maybe your business is thinking about getting into cloud computing and why you should be doing that, we have a couple of ways for you to get a hold of us today. You can do the obvious thing, send us an email. It's inthemoment@sdpb.org. Shoot us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372 or several of us are on Twitter. You can find us. Find me at Kent SDPB. We're going to talk cloud after this. And we are back on In the Moment. It's Tech Radio Today, part of SciFry. And it's a listener interactive program. If you have questions, we will try to provide those answers. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. That's 956-7372. Well, joining our regular guest today is a gentleman that is very close to the studio here. Tim Berry joins us. And Tim, you've got an interesting job. I think it's interesting, and I think our listeners will think that as well. You work in cloud. I keep wanting to say cloud computing.
Yeah, it's really across the cloud ecosystem. So whether it's storage or networking or compute, and we tend to be agnostic about the cloud providers we work with.
Can we talk about the project you're working on right now?
Yeah, at a high level.
Okay.
So currently what we've been tasked to do is work with different agencies as well as different businesses, different companies. But the current gig is working with a U.S. government agency that's not too far from here that has a great deal of legacy satellite data that they do processing on, storage on, and the order of the day really is to help them come up with a plan and a strategy and a way and the execution path to get that data moved into the cloud.
What if I were a business with a large amount of data that I store at my location, or maybe I co-locate with somebody, what would be some of the main reasons I'd want to move that data to the cloud instead of keeping it sort of local?
So if you can Google, top 10 reasons to the, to move to the cloud. And what you'll see is at the top, every one of those lists is going to be cost. And it is, in fact, the case that the costs, two things happen. Your costs tend to, you know, go up a little bit for a while because you have to be somewhat on your premises with your data while you're moving it to the cloud. And then as you go to the cloud, there's an incremental expense. And then as you retire the equipment and your facilities, the costs go back down again. But over time, the costs are really the savings because you're not managing things for power or security or real estate or heating and cooling, all the things that go with maintaining a bunch of gear. You're also not eating the depreciation of your equipment or having to, you know, sort of constantly be on guard for patching and updating and ongoing maintenance.
Yeah. Would there be, what is there a downside?
I guess the best analogy that I can give for, you know, sort of making the decision is when local power systems moved up into the utility-based grid, essentially there were lots of local power. So today you might have a Honda generator to power your house in a, you know, in a bad storm. But day in and day out, you wouldn't run that out in your yard to power your house because you get your power from a utility. They know how to get power organized, get it distributed, get it out to the grid. Cloud computing is much the same way. It's very quickly moving to something that, you know, you virtually plug into in terms of its availability. And, you know, everybody today is on the cloud. You know, if you've got a mobile device in your hand or nearby, you have stuff in the cloud. If you're working on systems locally, even things are moving that direction. So the downside is, I think in some instances there's cases for downside, especially if you have data that doesn't start its life in the cloud. So let's suppose I'm aggregating a bunch of real-time data for, let's say, farm fields around here, or, you know, some other local function. I'm going to want to keep that data somewhere where I know where it's at, and I'm probably also going to want to put it in the cloud.
Okay. So sort of a local backup?
Yeah, a backup, or it's going to potentially be a hybrid model because, let's say, I want to steer, you know, smart farm machinery with that data. You know, I may not want to be having to download that, so to speak, from, you know, an Amazon or a Google, especially if, you know, it's on YouTube.
Yeah. And your tractor's running something from Amazon Prime. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are those the, you mentioned Amazon and Google, are those the big players right now? I'd say Microsoft's probably a big cloud player
so,
as well.
So Amazon really is the 9,000-pound gorilla. They control a significant double-digit percentage of the market, and they're growing by leaps and bounds. Google, they've sort of moved sideways into it. They didn't really do a full-on assault in the way that Amazon did. Microsoft has moved in aggressively with Azure, and IBM has made a play with their acquisition of IBM SoftLayer. But there's those four probably top-tier players. There's other groups and organizations that do things out of private cloud or hybrid cloud where they may be doing some cloud capabilities that are co-located at a data center in a region. But the big players are, you know, the guys that buy real estate by the square mile, the power by the tens of megawatts, and bandwidth by the terabit. And those data centers are huge. Those facilities are gargantuan.
How would you pick one? How do you pick one for your client?
Well, first and foremost is going to be what am I running today? So if I was a Windows shop and I had a stack of Windows Federated IT, I might have Exchange servers, and I might have IIS, and I might have some SharePoint and some other things, and I'm really a Microsoft shop. Your logical choice is going to be Microsoft Azure, because Microsoft, all their Windows services and applications and capabilities really are first class there. If you were going from a lot of the startups, the greenfield companies, they'll start life at an Amazon because they don't have any sort of tie to, you know, a current IT estate. If you're a company that's making a transition to a bunch of different sorts of environments, you might have a lot of Windows, you might have a lot of Linux, you might have had a lot of other legacy systems, you're probably going to go to Amazon because they're going to probably be the most even in terms of providing same kinds of service capabilities for those.
I saw a little bit in the news this week, and I forget the code names that Amazon was using, but they're starting to develop programs to help folks that are on their cloud services with security. Apparently, yeah. It's been a big deal that a lot of their servers are misconfigured, and
right.
And maybe those clients didn't understand that they needed to configure them in a certain way. Is that
yeah, there's a their security model is really there's what Amazon will take care of, or the cloud provider will take care of, and there's what you have to take care of. So what they're going to do is they'll build you the castle wall, right? And they'll, you know, they'll secure the sort of the plumbing into and out of the castle. But once I'm inside the castle grounds, a lot of the security is on you, because, you know, if you let somebody in, then they're either trusted or you've put other things in place to keep them from, you know, exploiting, you know, finding the old wooden chest full of gold coins once they're inside the castle. So there's responsibilities that you as somebody who's building your infrastructure has out at that cloud, because it really is just a data center in the sky. So if you've got a data center, you're going to have physical security, which is the buildings and people having to swipe their badge and get recognized on a camera. And then once they get inside, you may have data center rooms inside your facility. Right, so that's computer room one, that's computer room two. Maybe I'm a reasonably sized regional insurance facility. Then once I get inside those rooms, I'm also going to have logins, and maybe I have to have a VPN token or a spinner to be able to get to the systems. And then further still, I may only be authorized once I get on the system to say, look at these files or look at these reports, and somebody else has the authorization to spool those files up and print them, or aggregate them into a report for, say, a CIO. And each one of those tiers of security is something that has to be provided. Think of Amazon as providing the walls for the data center, the security guards, and the cameras. And pretty much from there in, like the keys or the swipes to get into the data center rooms or the server rooms, to get logged into the machines as well as to use the assets is on you.
Does it kind of draw
the line?
I think it does draw the line for me. And what I'm trying to, what's coming to me is Amazon seems to be playing catch up with security with a bunch of companies that didn't know what they were doing when they got in there?
Everybody's playing catch up with security, because the ability for somebody to really scale and you know, not just good guy cloud, you know, expansion, but bad guy cloud expansion, where somebody comes in and buys up a bunch of machine instances and tries to attack the, you know, the surfaces of your virtual data center, your virtual private cloud. So there is catch up going on. They do have skin in the game. They're like everybody else. They don't want to have a black eye front page story about a security exploit, you know, taking down a significant customer. So they're putting things like, you know, watchdog kinds of tools, better NIDs, better data governance capabilities. And those are all the kinds of things that you really need in an enterprise IT environment. So they are getting pushed towards that, but they'll be charging you for it too.
Maybe Amos can help answer this question too, but what sort of percentage of your budget are companies typically spending on security, on keeping people outside your castle?
You know, I I honestly don't know. I think probably it's a good indicator would be how much square footage, say, you have at a facility for your data center rooms. So if I have a facility and I have 1,000 people there and I have, you know, 10,000 square feet of data center and a 30,000 square foot facility, it's probably a third. You know, you're spending a third of your utilities, security, real estate taxes to house
safe,
that.
Safe to call it overhead?
Safe to call it overhead.
Yeah. Well, and this is exactly what we kind of preach day in and day out, is that for a lot of our customers, they're not good at being in the physical security business. They're not in the data center building business, right? They're in the insurance business, or they're in the satellite imagery business, or they're in the whatever it happens to be. And so why not utilize somebody who's good at doing data storage, who's good at doing data center, who's good at basically all that fundamental cloud portion that you're not, and let them take care of it, and you work on your day-to-day activities on top of that platform.
Yeah, that's spot on, and that's what... That's what we see as well. And the, I guess the other part of it is that the economies of scale at these cloud data centers, typically once a week is truck day. And on truck day, new semis of equipment show up. It's all palletized and shrink wrapped. The old stuff is ripped down, pulled out. The new stuff is put in, burst, racked, cabled, wired, powered up, and it's like a factory. So they're doing things on a scale that, you just can't touch. So they can even guide the hardware vendors to, okay, build us something like this, because our racks are like this, and this is our power setup. So it's getting more and more difficult to, sort of compete with your own data center assets on that basis.
Okay. Well, that's a fascinating discussion. Folks, if you have a question for Tim, or really for anybody on the panel, you can get a hold of us. The email address is inthemoment@stpb.org. And the phone number is 1-800-524-3604. If you'd like to ask a question on the air, that's 800-524-3604. Also, our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/techradio, is a great place to stop. Check for the latest links that we post there, or post questions of your own. We can accommodate those as well. Jeff, did you have any? Jeff Lyric is with us on the show as well today. Jeff, do you have any questions for Tim, or have any comments on cloud computing?
One thing I will put in is, if you have legacy applications, cloud computing is not always the best fit. But any applications you do develop going forward, you really should make sure you design them with the cloud in mind. A lot of stuff moving there, you can save a lot of money, but you do have to kind of go in it with your eyes open, both security-wise and application development-wise. If you're going to be developing your own apps, you really want to make sure you test them and they work in a cloud environment. Many, banks and stuff, you have internal development staff develop their own apps, and they're not always written in a way that's going to make them work all that great in the cloud. So you're going to see a big uptick in that, in some apps having to be rewritten in a lot of places just so they work better in a cloud-type environment. So,
And why is that? The architectures of the servers are completely different? Or
So sort of the first thing that cloud providers really, nailed and got good at, if you look at the history, is the storage. Amazon's a data company, okay? So they really had to build an object storage back end that was big enough to support, the billions of transactions and records that they ingest a day for their, their consumer business. So they got really good at that. And so storage, object-based storage in the cloud, for backups, for Dropbox or Box or images or anything like that, is really watertight. That storage model doesn't necessarily work well with all of the applications, legacy applications, or other things that are there today. They're getting better at those, and so they're actually making it. They're making it easier for doing migration, but to the point, the data typically is the first thing to go, and what we've seen is once the data moves, the apps start taking off and moving that direction over time, and they may need to be rewritten or refactored or, you know, broken down into, you know, bits, you know, parcels that can be run on the virtual machines or in the containers at those cloud data centers. But typically what happens is once the data moves, everything is coming up, will be coming up behind.
And I would imagine that there's, in some instances, performance of apps and even data performance could increase. Are there instances where it doesn't? Is there a risky? No, you're shaking your head. No.
You know, it's not. I think it's 10 or 11 years ago, but there was a team that built one of the fastest supercomputer instances in the world at Amazon, out of, I think it was 380,000 processors. And they ran a top shelf supercomputing benchmark, and they were number 10 or 11 for some time. So it's really hard to come up with applications that don't run as well or better, because their hardware is always moving forward. They've really learned how to tighten things up on integration of their machines, and they have thousands upon thousands of engineers working on these problems all the time.
Very good. Tim, is there anything else you want to throw in before we go to break? Leave anything on the table?
No, we can, you know, keep chipping away at it.
Amazon had a conference not long ago. I believe you attended. Did you learn something there that you wanted to pass along?
Yeah, I was at the Amazon Web Services Public Sector Summit in Washington a couple weeks ago, and one of the themes that really jumped out is that their government services cloud and their FedRAMP cloud services are just taking off like a rocket. So the number of agencies that are doing things in FedRAMP is a standard for high security, high capability in cloud data centers. There's FedRAMP moderate and FedRAMP high. I know Amazon's objective is to have all their CONUS data centers or continental United States data centers FedRAMP sometime in the not too distant future. And they're moving all their services that way. So there are fewer and fewer impediments to government agencies and NGOs to do work in the cloud, and they're galloping towards it.
I would imagine that that's a huge sector.
And you know, as large as Amazon is, and as good as their environment is, my mother was still frustrated with Amazon Prime Day because she couldn't get the website to load. I just thought it was interesting
I couldn't either. So
that Amazon, and I'm assuming immense, running on their own foundation, was having availability issues.
Have we heard why?
I have not.
I've heard a couple theories on it. One is that they had an issue with potentially with Kinesis, which is a platform for ingest of lots of data. The other was that they had issues with their internal queuing or notification services, because it looked like what they were doing was generating those catalogs sort of on the fly, because every few minutes it would change. So if you went back to your page, you know, the offer that was there 15 minutes ago, you know, was gone, and there was a new swath. So I think they were generating those essentially for every single user every few minutes, and that's a lot of stuff moving around inside and then having to get pushed outside. Just speculation, though.
Well,
pure speculation.
I saw a couple cute puppy dogs, I guess.
Right.
I don't know how many. They took a little bit of ribbing from some late night hosts and some of the things on the, you know, you got this error page and it was a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Things are going wrong, but we're going to show you a picture of a dog.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw three or four different dogs. I don't know how many species they had, but I think they covered it pretty well.
I think they did too. Well, it's been a fascinating discussion, and we hope to have you back to talk more. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go around the table and hit some more topics after this. And welcome back to Tech Radio. We're in our final segment today. I want to remind you folks that if you have a question, we'll try to provide those answers. You have a couple different phone numbers to give you. 956-STPB is a great one to send us a text. That is 956-7372. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us live on the show, is 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. And, of course, the email address, inthemoment@stpb.org, is a great way to jot us a note and send us a question or a comment. We should point out, even though we just talked about the how we all considered the Amazon Prime Day a miserable failure because of all the dog pictures, they still set sales records, which doesn't seem to jive with my, you know, the way I think.
Well, you know, if we were saying, I don't know if I'd say miserable failure, but there certainly were hiccups and gotchas that happened, but that's because it was such a success, I guess. Can it be a success? Can it be a failure because of its success? I'm not sure. But Amazon had released a news release that basically said that this was their largest Amazon Prime Day ever, and that around the world they, you know, there were 100 million products purchased, and that, you know, their number one seller was the Amazon Dot, the little
Echo Dot,
mm-hmm. and then the Fire TV Stick. Which they substantially discounted. The other interesting thing I noticed too was the other major retailers were also having, not labeled as Prime Day, but also having a sale day, right, where they were doing the same competition. And it's amazing how Amazon can have that sort of ability to move the market like that. They're going to say on an arbitrary July 36-hour period that we're going to have a sale, which then forces everybody else to have sales. Who would you say is Amazon's biggest competitor? Would it be Jet or, you know, other online super retailers like that?
Was it Wayfair?
Best Buy.
Yeah.
Purple.
Depending on what it is.
Oh, Purple, yeah. You know, so anyway, there's a lot of others that did that same thing. So I think there was just a lot of commerce that day in general, and it's just amazing how we've come to that point.
Yeah, I think I saw a lot of either tweets or went to some blogs that said, hey, if you're having problems on Prime Day, here's some other places that have some pretty good deals too. And they list out the TV sets or the, you know, the computers or the laptops or the Chromebooks or whatever that any particular site, Newegg or Walmart or wherever, was having on sale. So, yeah, it was kind of like making up a Black Friday and pulling it off. And
right.
I think miserable failure might be a stretch, but it was maybe black eye.
It certainly was noticeable, right? I mean, they didn't get away with the issues that they had. It not only does a sale from a retailer make front page news, which is crazy in and of itself, but then the hiccups that came from that sale also made front page news.
Do consumers put two and four together, or two and two together to make four? We just talked about all the back end services that Amazon has, the web services and the storage and all the things they do, but they're also this, basically this big storefront where we get our things. So you order everything from, I don't know, barbecue rub to technology to, I think I just ordered a part for my wife's scooter the other day. Yep. A piece of plastic.
To be honest, they really do eat their own dog food, which is they really are using their own back-end infrastructure for this at their data centers worldwide. So if anything, they'll benefit sort of over time from this because everything that they've learned in terms of what broke down and what came apart won't happen again to them.
So they're going to have a meeting. Have had a meeting.
Yeah.
Don't forget, Amazon's just not a storefront for Amazon. Same storefront's now becoming a very common storefront for even other online businesses that have their own websites. I know if you search Amazon on certain stuff, you will actually find the other sellers have their own online presence, their own online stores and websites, but they're still using Amazon as their storefront, even though they have their own. So Amazon's really trying to take over the entire screen space for retail. So,
you know, I mean, what I'll say is, I don't know why people are surprised that Amazon had trouble on the big sale day. It's just like Black Friday. If you're gonna go to Target to buy, you know, eggs and milk, you're not gonna go on Black Friday in the morning. You just expect things are gonna be horrible. So, I mean, I think anybody that was like, oh, there's going to be a big sale, maybe I should order this the day before, or maybe I should order it afterwards, I don't want to have to deal with this or that or the other. I think virtually people will more and more run their lives like they would in the real world. And like, I'm going to avoid that. I don't want to deal with that. I don't need $10 off the Echo Dot to deal with whatever and this and that and the other thing. Or maybe they do, you know. So I don't think it's really any different than, you know, if there's a concert downtown and I can't find parking. You
so
know?
As a consumer, your expectation is not 100% uptime.
Right, I would imagine. I think it's very disingenuous for people to be like, I can't believe you guys were down for 4 minutes. I'm going to go somewhere else.
And that's just as frustrating as can't find a parking spot
sure,
in the parking lot.
Sure, it's the same
lot,
thing,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just like, a frustration that you
welcome
put
to
up
life.
With. Did you buy anything on Prime Day?
I didn't. This is actually is odd because normally I do buy something on Prime Day, but I didn't this year.
Anybody else? I didn't.
I went to look at the catalogs and to buy something, but every time I went to drill down, I got a dog.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll come back later.
Yeah, I wasn't right. Successful.
Yeah. Jeff, did you get anything?
Nope. In fact, right now I don't even have a Prime account. So.
Oh, well, there you go. So that's a good indicator. I mean, I think of the five of us here, we're all probably...
I'm not a good example because I still, you know, whatever, I have 12 Amazon Echoes at home, so I'm full up.
I think there were things other than Amazon
right.
Echoes
sure,
available.
Sure.
But we're certainly
those were the
of people
best
who purchase
though, yeah,
items
sure.
online.
Absolutely.
Well, not to change the subject, but I'm going to change the subject. Joel, you had a topic you wanted to bring up today. Let's talk about that. Is this just an app? This isn't a website.
Yeah, this is an app called Musical.ly, and it's musical.ly is the app name. If you're above 18, you've probably never heard of this. If you're above 16, you've probably never heard of this. But if you're below 16 and female, you likely already have it installed on your phone. And so it's a social media app, and it's pretty new, although not super new. It kind of came to my attention, an article I read, and then I go check my daughter's phone, and it's on there, even though I completely okayed it. Mm-hmm. So it's not too worrying on the face of it. Basically, it's an app that allows you to connect with other people, but what you do is you take these songs and popular songs, and you might lip sync to them and record yourself while record yourself while you're lip syncing to the video. You can add filters and do all sorts of crazy things. The things that you can do with your video are really fun. And then you share them. You can like other social media things. You can hashtag this and search what everybody's done under Cardi B or Justin Timberlake or whatever it is that you're looking at, and you can search through all of those things. The problem is, the reason I want to bring it up, and we probably maybe should talk about more when John's here, he probably knows more about it than I do, is the parental controls on it are terrible. They're almost non-existent. And 75% of the user base, this is from the company, is female. And most of them are below 16. So it's just ripe for all the wrong kind of people to exploit it. So, and like I said, on the face of it, it doesn't look dangerous at all. And it's probably not, but it's certainly worth for parents going out and checking out as you would anything else. I mean, we have so many of these apps, and you see something that says Musical.ly, you're like, okay, well, that's music. I don't need to deal with that. But it's just something to check on. It's a very social platform that is new enough that it doesn't have enough gates up for the right people, I don't think.
I will tell you, this lip sync thing.
Uh-huh.
Is it?
It's big.
What's the deal? I mean, was it like webcams a few years ago?
Sure.
I mean, I will tell you that there's a member of my household that some of the most joy, it is not me, the most joy that they've had in this last week is going and watching all of the police department lip sync challenge videos.
All right.
Every time I walk in the living room, there's another police department that's got a lip sync challenge up. And it's completely enjoyable to this family member, but this has got to be a thing. It might got to be a thing now.
Well, I mean, I don't think lip syncing is a new thing. I think it's been around.
It's not a
while.
A new thing, but I think it's going to be
well, it goes through trends. You know,
the police challenge is a big enough thing that I know about it, and I'm not on Facebook, so it's apparently something that's been going on recently. I've known about it for just a few days.
I'd say it's probably blown up in the last week and a half.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Rapid City's got one of the better ones, from what I understand.
Yeah. There's just these weird cycles that happen.
Yeah, sure.
You know, one person does something that's super creative and super entertaining, and there's an attempt to duplicate that by many, some of which are successful and some of which are not. And that's how you end up with a craze. You know, same way, you know, the ALS challenge, a lot of that stuff that goes around, the Tide Pod challenge.
Yeah, or I don't know if anybody's seen the one that's going around with the rubber chicken playing Pachelbel's Cannon. I don't know if you've seen that.
You will.
No, I did not.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
You'll see it.
You could really just say anything obscure.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like,
you know, there's probably
absolutely
a challenge on
and
that.
And by
there?
The time you get to it, somebody's already heard it and done it. But yeah, no, it's
pretty
It
sounds like the Gumby
impressive.
Slinky challenge.
It's slightly more interesting than that, but it's worth watching.
Huh.
Rubber chicken, Pachelbel's Cannon. So.
Well, I'll have to check out.
There's all sorts of
Musical.ly.
Yeah. And, getting back to that, it's an app, a social media app, and you know, parents, be aware that it's a thing to check. Another thing to add to your list to keep tabs on your.
Amos
children.
Mentioned trivia, HQ trivia, mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know what I didn't do? I wasn't smart enough to say you should use me as a reference because then I get free lives.
You get free lives.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying it other than they've had a lot of technical issues.
They do have a lot of technical issues.
And
yeah.
They'll have to get that straightened out if they're gonna make it. I will tell you that. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our panelists today, Joel and Jeff and Amos and Tim. Thanks for sitting in with us today. It's been fun. Hope you've had a good time. And hope it's not the last time on the show. We'd love to have you back. Folks, we're here with you 24 hours a day. SDPB is there with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen for a copy of today's show. And folks, have a great weekend.